WNYC Studios is brought to you by ZBiotics. Seize the day after a night of drinks with ZBiotics pre-alcohol probiotic drink. ZBiotics was invented by PhD scientists to break down the byproduct of alcohol, which is most responsible for making you feel crummy the next day. Drink ZBiotics before your first drink, drink responsibly, and you'll wake up refreshed and ready to take on the day. Try it for yourself at ZBiotics.com/WNYC and get 15% off your first order when you use WNYC at checkout. That's ZBiotics.com/WNYC and use the code WNYC at checkout for 15% off.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Welcome back to All of It and happy holiday season to everybody. I'm Allison Stewart. Today's show is dedicated to celebrating at home with food and friends and family. And one way to start things going is by putting together a really delicious cheese plate. In the words of our next guest, cheesemonger Anne Saxelby, cheese is culture. Because in addition to being delicious, according to Anne, cheese is history, art, science, and even has the potential to save the planet. Anne is the author of a book called The New Rules of Cheese, a fun and quirky guide to the essentials of cheese. In addition to busting some big cheese myths, Anne includes tips on how to make a stylish cheese platter, make your own cheese at home, expand your cheese palate, and taste cheeses properly, and much more. Anne Saxelby is the owner of Saxelby Cheesemongers, Manhattan's first shop dedicated to American artisanal cheese. Anne went to art school and then pivoted to cheese. So I asked her, why cheese?
This is correct. Yeah, I went to art school. I was actually, you know, when I was thinking about college, I was thinking about business school or art school. And my parents, who, you know, God bless them, are not the typical parents, were like, you should go to art school. You know, you can learn business anytime in your life, but you've only got this one shot to you know, pursue art. So in doing so, I really was just immersed in like this weird, wonderful world that was New York City. I went to NYU, and through being at NYU and being exposed to international travel through the study abroad program and stuff like that, I was able to discover this whole world of amazing cheese that I had never had access to. I grew up in the suburbs of Chicago, and it was a trip to Florence that really like floored me. I went to visit my friend there, and I was like, wait a minute. This is cheese? Like, I didn't know this was cheese. And so when I got back from that trip, I went to Murray's, which is, of course, like the most famous cheese shop in the city, and started basically becoming a stalker. I would go there and, like, be that annoying college kid with, you know, $20 to spend, wanting to, like, taste everything in the store, and really just started to fall in love with this world of delicious cheese.
Now, your company, Saxelby Cheesemonger, specializes in American artisanal cheese. What makes a cheese artisanal?
Artisanal means it's handmade. So it's not being made with a mechanized process by machines in a factory. It's being made by humans with their hands and all the, you know, lovely quirks that come along with that.
So what does being artisanal mean for its taste?
Well, I would argue that being artisanal means that it's going to be a more interesting flavor. I feel like most processed foods or industrially processed foods are really about standardization and homogenization, and artisan cheese is the exact opposite of that. I always like to draw parallels between cheese and wine because I feel like people tend to know a little bit more about wine than they know about cheese. And with wine, you really have a vintage every year. But with cheese, you have a vintage every day. Every day you make cheese, the milk is going to be slightly different depending on what the animals were grazing on, what their weather was like, where they are in their lactation cycle. There are all these factors that make milk this amazing, ever-changing substance. And so the cheese will consequently be always changing.
You make that point that cheese is actually a seasonal food in many ways. So how does that factor into price and production?
Well, cheese is definitely seasonal. We see that the most with our goat and sheep cheese producers. Goats and sheep breed in the fall. They're pregnant all winter long, and then they give birth in the springtime. And then, of course, the babies get the milk for a little bit, and when they're weaned, then they start to make, cheeses from that. So it's a really labor-intensive process, being a farmer in general, and then being a cheesemaker specifically. And so the artisan cheeses that we see are definitely a little bit pricier than their kind of industrial counterparts, but it's definitely a reflection of all the labor that goes into it. I mentioned in the book, actually, you know, the next time you think that a piece of cheese is expensive, you should put yourself in a cheesemaker's shoes. You know, they get up at 4 or 5 a.m., milk the animals, go make cheese for about 8 to 10 hours, milk the animals again in the evening, and then there's all the chores to do to clean up after the cheesemaking process, to take care of the cheese. It has to be salted. It has to be put in the cave. It has to be turned. It has to be brushed over many months. And so I think cheese is actually quite a bargain when you take all that into account.
My guess is Ann Saxelby. The name of the book is The New Rules of Cheese, A Freewheeling and Informative Guide. Okay, so let's get to some basics here. What are the five basic styles of cheese?
All right, so I feel like people can slice and dice this in different ways, but to me, the five basic styles of cheese are fresh cheeses. So this is anything without a rind that's pretty simple to make, things like fresh chèvre, ricotta, mozzarella, queso fresco, things like that. They're kind of mild and milky in flavor. Then the second category is bloomy rind cheese. These are cheeses like brie or camembert that have a whitish rind growing on the outside. It's kind of a soft whitish rind. And these cheeses tend to be softer in texture, gooey, creamy, unctuous, and they also tend to have like a mushroomy and buttery flavor. So that's bloomy rind. Then we've got natural rind cheeses, which are basically cheeses that are salted, left out in the cave to age, and whatever ambient bacteria is there is going to come in and kind of do its work to colonize the rind. And those cheeses tend to be semi-firm to firm and can have a whole range of flavors, nutty, earthy, grassy. There are literally thousands of adjectives that I could use, but just name a few. Then we have wash rind cheeses. These are the stinkers. So washed rind cheeses tend to be orange or reddish on the outside because the washing of the rind encourages a certain kind of bacteria that has that orangey-red color to live there, and those are quite pungent and strong. And then last but not least, the fifth category is blue cheese, which everybody can recognize because, of course, it's pocked with all that gorgeous blue mold on the inside.
All right, I'm going to say something out loud, and people at home, just settle. You say mozzarella is not real cheese. Why not?
Technically, as it's made in America, and I know this is getting like really deep into the cheese snobbery, but I just learned this myself probably 4 or 5 years ago from my friend Rin Caputo, who runs a dairy in Pennsylvania called Caputo Brothers Creamery. And she came to my shop. At that time, we had a shop in the Essex Market, and she made mozzarella for me at the shop. And while she was doing it, she was explaining to me the difference between Italian mozzarella and American. And all cheese is, by definition, a fermented product. So you take milk, you add live cultures to it, the cultures eat the lactose or the sugar and convert it to lactic acid, and that kind of sends the cheese on its way for flavor development. But mozzarella, as it's made in the United States, basically the cheesemakers take milk. Instead of acidifying it with live cultures, they add an acid, like citric acid or vinegar, and then they add rennet, which is the enzyme that coagulates the milk and turns it into a solid curd. So basically, when you're eating mozzarella from anywhere that's not Caputo Brothers Creamery, you're eating kind of solidified milk. And that's why people who are lactose intolerant have such a hard time with mozzarella, because it hasn't gone through that fermentation process. I'm a mozzarella evangelist. It is my goal to get more real mozzarella going in this country, but it's a thing.
What's the taste difference between the two types of mozzarella you're discussing?
Oh my gosh, a world away. The mozzarella that's made from a true fermented process, it tastes tangy. It tastes cheesy, for lack of a better word. Mm-hmm. I feel like when I eat, you know, quote-unquote normal mozzarella, it's quite nice. It's like, it's sweet, it's milky, it's satisfying, but it doesn't have any of that kind of tangy, cheesy flavor. But when you eat the real deal fermented stuff, it just is like a totally different experience. And if I can go a bridge further and get even nerdier about mozzarella, in Italy, mozzarella, in order to be called mozzarella, has to be made from buffalo milk. If it's made from cow's milk, it's called fior di latte. So we're like bastardizing mozzarella in so many ways, we like shouldn't even go there.
I know, starting to feel guilty. So listening might be thinking, I've done the sourdough. Maybe it's time to make some cheese at home. So if someone is ambitious and wants to start, make a beginner cheese, what's a good beginner cheese and what kind of equipment do I need?
All right. I would say two good options are fresh ricotta or fresh goat cheese. To make fresh ricotta, it could not be simpler. You need, you need a pot, you need milk, you need lemon juice, you need a colander, and you need cheesecloth. And that's really it. You literally, you know, take the milk, you heat it up to just before boiling, add lemon juice, which acts as your acidifier, that will make the curds curdle. And you literally just scoop those out with a spoon, put them into the colander lined with cheesecloth, and voila, your ricotta is done. And it's like so easy, delicious. And I feel like it's a good like confidence builder too, because mm-hmm. it's like you're like, okay, I did it. I actually made cheese. equally kind of simple, but just takes a little bit longer, is fresh chèvre. So that would just entail, same equipment that I mentioned before, with the addition of cultures. You would have to buy a starter culture from a cheesemaking supply company, and there are several that kind of are more geared towards home cheesemaking. And in that case, you heat up your goat's milk, you add the culture, and then instead of having like the instant gratification of ricotta, you have to wait overnight for that milk to acidify and solidify into curd. And then the following day, you can just scoop that curd out into your colander lined with cheesecloth, and you've got fresh chèvre.
My guest is Anne Saxelby. The name of the book is The New Rules of Cheese, A Freewheeling and Informative Guide. Let's get some information. How do I store my cheese? What's the best way to store cheese?
All right. So storing cheese, never in plastic wrap. That is like rule number one. I know plastic wrap is just like the most common thing you see cheese wrapped in everywhere, but plastic wrap will... It just makes cheese taste stale. I don't know of a better way to say it. So when I store cheese at home, if I have access to, you know, cheese paper that's kind of specially designed to storing cheese, that works really well. It's breathable, and it also prevents mold from growing on the surface. So that's cool. I realize most people probably don't have cheese paper, so my second and third best options are foil and parchment paper. Those both keep cheese really, really well. Stay away from the plastic wrap if you can. And a note on cheese storage, there's a little thing about this in the book as well. If you've got moldy cheese in your fridge, please do not throw it away. You can always cut off any surface mold that is growing on your cheese, and you can use that to, you know, you can use it to cook with. You could just keep eating it. But I have like some really terrible looking odds and ends of cheese in my fridge at any given time. And I'm like, I'm not afraid of you, cheese. I will cut the mold off you and find a way to use you.
Well, what about those people who are afraid of cheese because they're lactose intolerant? You say it doesn't mean you can't eat cheese. What cheese can you eat if you're lactose intolerant?
Yeah, so if you're lactose intolerant, like I mentioned before, when you're making cheese, you're basically taking the live cultures that are added to the milk are taking that lactose and eating it and digesting it and turning it into lactic acid. So the longer a cheese is aged, the less of that, like, you know, trace element of lactose will be left in a cheese. So I would say any firm aged cheese should be just fine for anyone who is lactose intolerant. And they say especially goat and sheep's milk cheeses can also be easier to digest. So I would say a firm aged goat or sheep cheese would be your best bet.
You have a section called Cheese Does Not Make You Fat. Although 75% of calories come from fat. Make your case that cheese does not make you fat.
All right. So So again, I think, so cheese is a very potent food source. It is full of fat and it is full of protein. So I think that what I'm trying to say is when you're eating good cheese and you have a little bit of good cheese, you feel quite satisfied. Like I probably eat more cheese than, you know, most humans. And it's actually quite annoying because I happen to be like, you know, tall and skinny by nature because of my Irish grandmother, who, you know, I thank her every day. But people always come to the cheese counter and they're like, oh, but you eat cheese all day. Why are you so, you know, why aren't you fat? And I'm like, oh, that's, you know, it's just not how it is. I feel like I'm not sitting around gorging on, you know, pounds of cheese every day. I might eat a half pound of cheese in a day, but that's kind of excessive. But I feel like if you're eating a standard serving of cheese, which is probably about 2 ounces, you're actually going to feel really satisfied and really full. So I think that you can get away with, you know, eating little bits of good cheese and not going overboard. I think the cheese makes you fat thing really comes from like the Domino's triple stuffed crust pizza where you've got, you know, 1+ pounds of this mozzarella that's not really cheese on your pizza and you're eating all that. That arguably could make you fat. But if you're eating like a good, you know, wedge of Parmesan or something and you have a few ounces, you know, you're just going to feel satisfied and you will not get fat.
Let's talk about presentation. Is there a particular way to slice cheese?
Yes. I always think about slicing cheese like I think about cutting up a cake or a pie. I always try to give everybody the same amount of middle to rind ratio. Nothing drives me crazier than going to a party and seeing someone kind of hollow out the middle of like a brie style cheese or cutting a piece of cheese all the way back to the rind so that someone just has this like, you know, impossible, you know, rind piece to deal with. So if it's at all possible, I would recommend kind of like respecting the geometry of the cheese and approaching it like you would cutting up, yeah, a pie or a cake. Then everybody gets a little bit of the middle and a little bit of the outside, which are both very good when eaten together.
What do I put on my cheese plate in addition to cheese? And how do I decide?
Oh my gosh. I mean, anything. I feel like cheese is so amazing because it has such a kind of riot of flavors going on in every little morsel that it continually surprises me what pairs well with cheeses that I've tasted, you know, for years and years and years. So I think don't be intimidated is rule number one, and try out different combinations that seem exciting to you. But as a general rule of thumb, I would say, you know, always winners, dried fruit, nuts, olives, pickles, honey, preserves, charcuterie if you're a meat eater, salami or prosciutto, and then, of course, crackers and good bread. And really just experiment and mix and match and see what you know, makes you happiest.
My guest is Ann Saxelby. The New Rules of Cheese, A Freewheeling and Informative Guide is her new book. Now, you wrote a piece in Eater in April about artisan cheesemakers and the dairy industry and the pandemic. And your company derives 50% of its income, more than 50% of its income from wholesales and distribution. And more than 70% of that is made up to sales in restaurants. How have you been adapting?
Oh, man, it has been such a crazy year. I feel like as a small business owner, you're like always, you know, scrambling and running around to like, you know, plug all the holes and fix all the leaks and, you know, figure out what's going on because your business is always moving. But this year has been a real doozy. So when, you know, the pandemic hit, our restaurant sales disappeared overnight. And our retail sales at the Chelsea Market, where we have our retail shop, also basically disappeared overnight, even though that's the store has been open the entire time. And I would encourage all listeners who live in New York City to visit the Chelsea Market and the Chelsea Local downstairs. That market relied heavily on tourism and on people working in the building, and both of those things are not happening right now. So if you can get out there and support the local businesses, that would be awesome. But in our case, the thing that really kind of popped up out of nowhere was mail order, because we do ship cheese nationwide from our website. And all of a sudden, you know, we started getting these orders pouring in. And I feel like as bigger businesses like Fresh Direct and companies like that struggled to keep up with demand and were working with 2-week delays or 3-week delays early on in the pandemic, we were able to keep fulfilling those cheese orders. So I feel very fortunate that we had kind of set up this website that nobody ever cared about or looked at, really, that has now become a useful tool for us in our business. That said, it's still a big struggle, and I know that our sales overall are still very much down for the year, and that cheesemakers, you know, are continuing to struggle to turn all of their milk into cheese and be able to age and sell that cheese. So we really are, you know, relying on all the cheese lovers out there to keep supporting the small guys so we can keep going.
Go forth and eat cheese. And the book is so great. The book is really a whole lot of fun. And it's also, the art direction is really beautiful as well. So it's good to look at, too.
Yeah, the illustrations were done by Alex Citrin, who's another New Yorker. And, yeah, she was just a pleasure to work with. I think the design team did an awesome job.
That was my conversation with Ann Saxelby, the owner of Saxelby Cheesemongers and the author of the book called The New Rules of Cheese. You're listening to All of It. I'm Allison Stewart, and I'll meet you back here after the news.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.